Hey, this is Arrow. My interviewing style was one that was definitely influenced by my wife because she came from this rock star background. She lived the life. She hung out with the rock stars. She was in the recording studio. And I'll never forget the first time that I ever met her. She said, look, here's the thing. You know, don't give me any of your DJ ego crap. I know people more famous than you. But that was her way of saying, look, there's no such thing as being too famous for the famous. In other words, you got to be yourself and you've got to treat the famous like they're regular people. Because in reality, what do we all have but air to breathe? And who better to get real with than this man right here? We are unplugged and totally uncut with comedian Ari Spears.
You are like a rock star.
Oh, I wish.
I swear to you, the moment that the Comedy Zone in Charlotte announced you were coming, yeah. I swear to God, they have called me up. People are going, is he going to be in the studio?
Going on? Oh, man, hilarious. Okay, I'll take it, but all right.
Man, it's amazing. In fact, I'm going to be at your show on Saturday night with somebody who just would not stop begging me to be there.
Is that right?
And I'm going, oh, my God, I'm going to meet somebody bigger than Bob Dylan.
Oh, God, I wish, brother.
How have you gotten into everybody's life like this?
I don't know. Like you said, maybe the power of the internet, you know, between YouTube and some of the other social media outlets that are out there. Maybe that's just been the thing that's, I don't know, kept me ahead of the game. Or it's still in the game.
Is that important to you, doing the internet stuff, the social media?
You know, I'm almost, you know, old school in the sense that, you know, I was born in 1975 and I was an 80s baby. So everything that got introduced into mainstream America, computers, internet, websites, I'm coming into that. I was there for the birth of that,
right.
Whereas like a lot of kids now are coming into it where it already exists. So I'm saying that to say, like, I'm real old school, man. Like, I just stopped using a typewriter. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to get with the program, but my old mind sometimes stays locked into what I knew, you know what I'm saying, and what I grew up with.
Did you have to wait for film to be developed, or is that...
Remember, man, I was there when it was all about the Kodak Polaroid with the bulb, the bar bulb that you put in. It let you know how many flashes you had. So, yeah, that's how far back I go.
So I asked a question yesterday. Would you give up the internet and ATM cards to go back to a simpler life? What would you do?
No, because what we have now is awesome, you know, and it's like, you know, I remember comedian Bill Burr had made a reference to this where he said something about every generation believed that their generation was the best. Anything before them was so irrelevant or old. And I just think to myself now, other than, you know, STD-free sex, you know, the 70s couldn't have been as cool as the 80s. You know, other than the music and the disease-free sex, the 80s were it, man. But then the 90s came along and that was better. And then the millennium came along and that was better. So, you know, it all gets better. You know what I mean?
Now, you're in front of people all the time.
Yeah.
So you get to see the innovators and the motivators. Are you hearing anything out there of what could be next?
I don't know. It's hard to say because, you know, you never know. Like in this business, just when you think you got your finger on the pulse of what's going on and you know, you think you know, a curveball is thrown at you. So you never know. I mean, again, going back to YouTube, sometimes I bust my brain trying to come up with great, creative, well-written comedy. And, you know, I'm thinking the better it's written, the smarter it is, the edgier it is. This thing is going to get a gazillion hits, and it won't. But yeah. Some kitten playing in a brown paper bag gets a billion hits. Or some baby, you know, doing a funky dance will get a gazillion hits. So you never know, man. People are so fickle, man.
Is it? Yeah, because we're trained all the time. What is a viral video? What is that viral sound?
Right.
And you can't nail it.
Well, somebody introduced me to Vine. It's great entertainment, but again, my mind thinks in such a bigger platform in terms of when I try to do something comedically, I think about casting and music and direction and the sets and scenes. So my stuff tends to be, you know, 5-10 minutes. I don't know how to be funny in 6 seconds, other than maybe slipping on a banana peel on accident. I don't know how to, like, my brain is not wired to do that. But then I look at Vine and I look at some of the things that people are doing. And, you know, there's a way to make it work. You know, I got to figure that out. That's part of the game. It's almost like if you're an athlete, you know, there's your defense, your offense, you know, your passing, your rebounding. So that's an aspect of the game I got to figure out.
See, that's like Twitter. They give you 140 characters.
Right.
And for me to say something in 140 characters, it's like,
Well, you know, sometimes that's easier to me than Vine because Vine is visual. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, I could be, you know, driving or smoking a joint or something and one line will come to mind and that can be funny and I can do that on Twitter. Yeah. But to have to actually physically be on camera and do something for 6 seconds, it's a challenge, man.
Now, you were born in 1975, so yeah. Are you telling me that your parents were bumping to Super Freak or
to Rick James, or they just didn't get
the Bee Gees?
Oh, no. I mean, you know, Ohio Players and Earth, Wind & Fire. And I grew up listening to some of the greatest music of the times, man, I think ever. That's why I say again, back in those days, you had to sing for real to be a singer. Mm-hmm. Like nowadays, you know, with computers and, you know,
auto-tune.
Voice auto-tune, you don't have to be able to sing. You know, it's amazing to me to watch Jennifer Lopez on American Idol give advice about singing.
Yeah.
Like, she can't sing.
That's like Chris Brown, man. Let me show you how I can bend my note with this little computer.
Right. But the thing is, Chris Brown can sing, though. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's just, it's wild, man. So, 70s were the best music time, I think, of any generation.
If there could be a Teddy Pendergrass or a Luther Vandross in the modern world, do you think it's Drake or do you think it's Chris Brown?
Hell no. Listen, Teddy Pendergrass, one of my favorite songs ever is when he said, "Let's rub our bodies down with hot oil, baby." That is the essence of the 70s. What black person wants to get smeared with oil? You look like patent leather. There's no way we would do that today. But that's black love, man. Velvet paintings and afros. Yeah, brother.
Now, how has comedy changed since you were with the Fox Network?
You know, I don't know that it's changed all that much because I think that, you know, everybody's style is, you know, people have certain styles and, you know, some people are edgy, some people are blue, some people are political, some mm-hmm. people are witty. It just depends on what your flavor is.
But isn't that the American way, though, that we all have this freedom to be whatever we want?
Listen, comedy is subjective. You know, what might be funny to you might be trash to someone else and mm-hmm. vice versa. Like, it never fails, and any comedian will tell you, you know, you do stand-up all across the country. Even if you're in a packed house of 300 people, we have a trained eye where it's like, if 299 are laughing, we're focused on the one that isn't. You know, because we notice that you stand out. Like, how come is it that these people are dying and you're the one person that doesn't get it?
Do you ever want to call them out?
I do. I absolutely do. Because it's annoying. It bothers you. It's like an itch you got to scratch. But, you know, listen, man, you truly, you know, as the saying goes, you can't please everybody.
See, that's like in radio. Growing up in the radio industry where the only connection we had to a listener was a telephone.
Right.
You know, and then after you come off the air, people go, man, I can't listen to your show because I don't get you. Well, why don't you call me?
But more importantly, you keep listening.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Right. That's like the people that would say to me, Mad TV is way better than SNL. SNL sucks. Every week I watch it, it just sucks. But you watch it.
That's right.
You're trained. You're hypnotized. So, you know, listen, there are people out there that in his prime, people didn't like Michael Jordan.
What?
And you would go, this is the greatest athlete of our time, certainly the greatest basketball player ever, and you don't like Michael, so you can't please everybody.
What do you think Lorne Michaels, what do you think his secret is, that he has kept this show on TV, and even though it does suck many times, what's the secret?
I just think that from day one, they started out with a great base. Mm-hmm. I mean, that year they premiered, what was it, Jim Belushi, Gilda Radner, Dan Aykroyd, later on Bill Murray, Chevy Chase. I mean, they had a powerhouse, a dream team of great comedic talent. And I think from there, once they established themselves as that kind of show with that kind of talent, people knew it was something special.
Do you think one day they'll say Jimmy Fallon was on that show? Come on, you got to be loving Fallon, or do you?
Listen, man, it's amazing. So, like, some people come through there and you know, some people hit really hard, and, you know, some don't. I mean, listen, Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on Saturday Night Live, and we all really remember her from Seinfeld. Nobody really remembers her from SNL, but she was on there. So, you know, and when you're a show that has existed for that long, there's going to be ebb and flows. You know, you can't be that hot for what? That show's been on, what, 30 years mm-hmm, almost? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're going to hit some lows.
So now, let's think like businessmen here. I was a big fan of Mad TV.
Yeah.
Why do you think that it didn't topple Saturday Night Live? I had a friend that we sat there and we would bet that this right. is it, man. This is
you know what
it's
like being on Mad TV was like playing for the CBA, and Saturday Night Live was the NBA. Okay. I mean, it didn't matter how good we were.
Right.
We never got the support from Fox Network. We never got advertising. The only time they would advertise a show is just after the 11 o'clock news, because we came on at 11:30. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm sorry, 11, and the news would come on from 10:30 to 11. So at the very end of the news, they would say, and don't forget to watch Mad TV coming up next. That was the only advertisement we got. We never got advertised during the primetime hours of some of the big hit shows. And we had guests on like Susan Sarandon, Jay-Z, Gwen Stefani, what's the lady's name that did the movie with James Caan, Misery? What's her name? Kathy Bates. I mean, we had some.
Hey, I saw her naked in a movie.
Did you really?
Hell yeah!
That was like
that took some guts.
Yeah, that was misery. So to have those kind of respectable names on and that kind of talent, and still not get the proper publicity, I don't think we just ever got the respect we deserve from the industry. People that watched the show and that knew the show, no doubt would say, you guys are way better than SNL. But, you know, we just never got that industry love, man.
What's the one thing you don't want to see of you on YouTube or the internet?
Oh, God. I don't think there's anything that I would be ashamed of if I didn't do it
myself.
Would
you giggle if something came out? You'd go, yeah, that's me.
Nah, because I'm pretty calculated in terms of my surroundings and mm-hmm. where I'm at and what I do. So if anything's going to be on YouTube, I'm probably the one putting it on there.
Do you ever go back there and do, because in radio they teach us that we have to consistently check to find right. out if there is anything up there, if somebody caught us and stuff. Do you find yourself having to do the study work too?
Nah, not that, because again, once I leave my house, I know that everybody is a paparazzi. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? With camera phones now. Yeah.
Everybody.
So I try to be careful about, you know, moves I make and what I do. I don't pick my nose in public. I don't, if I got a wedgie, I let it hang there till I get home. You know, I try to not eat like an animal, you know, so I'm very aware. Yeah.
What was it? It was this past week that Katy Perry sued somebody because of a picture that somebody took. Do you find yourself in a situation where if somebody takes a shot of you, you're going, come on.
Yeah.
Cut me some slack.
Nah, because I know what it is. You know, this is the business we've chosen. So when you leave your house, you public domain. You know what I mean? You want privacy. Stay at home.
Now, did you choose it or do you think somebody else chose it for you?
No.
I want to challenge you on that.
No. I've chosen it, you know, because, you know, 25 years ago, if I didn't want this life, I would have chose something
what
different.
What would you have done?
I don't think I could have done anything else.
Bowling? Like, professional
no,
bowling?
Oh, no, hell no. I'm the most non-athletic person on the planet, and that's a shame because I'm black. So that I go against the stereotype. I can't play basketball for nothing, mm-hmm. you know. So comedy's always been it for me, man. You know, my dad was a movie historian. So, I mean, even at a young age as a kid, I watched everything from Gone with the Wind to every James Cagney movie ever made, Jimmy Stewart. You know, I've seen a little bit of everything. Midnight Cowboy. I saw it all, man. My father showed me everything just shy of porn, and I snuck in some of those.
Would you like to one day look at your dad and say, dude, what happened, man?
Dude, my mother and father weren't together for a long time. So when I would go over to my dad's house, he had a massive VHS collection, and he had this big shelf, kind of like a library, and all the movies were in those boxes. Not the boxes of the original film, but those boxes you would buy and put them in. So yeah. You had to put index cards in them and label them what the movies were. And he would mix the pornos with the regular movies. So it'd be like Gone with the Wind, Uptown Saturday Night, It's a Wonderful Life, and then Big Booty Bonanza 8. Like, dude, man, you got a kid, man. Come on. No discretion.
SNL got a lot of press when they for the first time ever they're going to have an African American woman.
Right?
Don't you think they're a little bit late on that?
You know, I tell people, and I don't know if this is the proper thing for me to say, but you know, we live in this denial about show business where it's like, look, show business is political and it's racist, you know, and nobody.
But we know that going into it.
We know that, but we don't acknowledge it, particularly black entertainers. Yeah, that's not something we speak about too loudly because it's almost like you're biting the hand that feeds you.
Yeah.
So we kind of turn a blind eye to it. But it is, you know, and of course it's late. You know, it's like I look on television and I can't name one black female that's got her own show. You know, I look at all the children's movies that come out every year where little white kids go off on these magical, mystical adventures in enchanted lands and forests, and they're always white. I've never seen kids of color in a movie about kids enjoying themselves. And we're talking about black kids that grow up poor in the hood, fight racism, loose dogs, stray bullets. They could use a vacation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If anybody deserves to go off into some enchanted forest, some little black kids do.
Now, why do you think that Wanda Sykes and Arsenio seem to get political? Do you think the reasons why is because somebody's telling them that they have to do this because research shows?
No, I think that sometimes, you know, again, it we know how the business is. And again, sometimes we either turn a blind eye to it or we just are too afraid to say anything. But it gets to a point sometimes where the level of frustration is so high that if you don't say something, you're going to go nuts. Mm-hmm. So every now and then, I guess them being political is them yelling out of frustration, because it is hard. You know what I mean? It's extremely hard. Like I said, it's a political business. It's an unfair business. And at times it's a racist business. Mm-hmm. You know
how are you getting around that? What is your defense to get around that? How do you walk into meetings and go, I'm going to bite the head off a bat? Like,
no, you can't do that. I remember I had lunch with Chris Rock one time and he told me, he gave me the greatest advice. He was like, look, man, all I can tell you is just keep writing. Stay as creative as you can and try not to piss these white folks off. you almost have to like enter through the back door somehow. You know what I mean? You got to smile and dance your way into their hearts, man.
Yeah, and when you talk about writing, right away I start thinking about Diane Warren, who has never released a song in her life, but she's one of the richest people in the music industry because she writes music.
Right.
Do you get royalties or do you sell yourself in a way to where you can enhance someone's career to where you can get credit?
You know, I don't personally do that because I'm too busy trying to focus on getting my ship off the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it depends on how you position yourself. You know, like I still get royalties every time Jerry Maguire is shown. And it's a nice decent check. It's a nice surprise.
I call that Jesus money.
Yeah. I wish Jesus would be a little bit more generous sometimes, though. But yeah, it just depends on how you position yourself. If you play the game right and you're able to put yourself in the right position, sometimes you make more money in royalties and what do they call it when the show is syndicated than you do as a player.
Which is the reason why so many times they go into syndication so quickly.
Right.
And then
right.
You're like, really? Why?
Yeah.
Molly already?
I mean,
I think it was
rumored at one point that NBC was willing to pay like Jerry Seinfeld $5 million an episode, but he had already sold the show into syndication and you know, he didn't need the money, man.
Speaking of that, he's been caught with the members of Seinfeld filming. Rumor mill is they're either doing a Super Bowl commercial or Seinfeld is taking the show to the internet. How do you feel about television going in that direction? And wouldn't that... That kind of sets the future in motion in a way that it now makes the networks not in control anymore.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, again, going back to social media. It's like, again, and now if you do it right with like avenues like Vine, which if you have enough Vine followers, there are guys getting deals from Vine. I know that Vine is paying one of the top Viners $3,500 per Vine.
I want his
You know,
job.
YouTube, you could get paid. Yeah. I know people that make anywhere from 10 to 40 grand a month off YouTube. So it's like, again, the networks and the movie studios, they're still the top dog because their ability to reach out to the masses is so powerful. But like you said, in terms of keeping up with the time, you don't need them. You don't have to have that's not the only resource you can go to. You know, they're not the only fish in the pond.
Yep.
You know what I mean? There are other avenues now.
Now, is the comedy world like the radio world? There is an evolution taking place. A new age of broadcaster, a new age of comedian is coming in, and the old guys are going, all right, we're backing off. Do you see that as like the Jay Lenos of the world? They're all stepping back saying, we've got to let something new happen.
You know, I think it's more about I think the censorship thing. You know, it's almost like the comedians are almost getting in trouble now for things that they say.
Yep.
There's been a bunch of comedians who have had to make apologies for things that they've said on the air, be it radio or TV. And again, this is the one last platform left of free speech. You know, when you get up on that stage, that's free speech. So the fact that they're trying to censor comedians now, that disturbs me a little bit. You know, it's like I understand we got to be politically correct. I understand people are sensitive about certain things. But if we don't have freedom of speech, then what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even on radio, you know, but I understand because there are, you know, stations with soccer moms and certain people listening. You can't curse and you can't say certain things, which is what I love about, you know, XM and Sirius, you know, satellite radio. You can say whatever you want.
Yep.
No censorship. And I just don't like the sensitivity of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
How do you turn it off in the way of, I mean, because, I mean, if you're in here producing a commercial with me, I'm going to say every word in the book.
Right.
How do you turn it off when you go live, meaning live in a studio? Are you not afraid that jock is going to bring that word out of you and you're going to go,
because they're so sensitive about losing their jobs.
It's a $350,000 fine.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah. Between that and the fine, it's almost like they're talking to you with their finger on the button.
Yeah.
Just in case. But again, I'm so conscious of that even when I know I'm going to say something where normally I would put in an expletive, I sub it out for something else. You know, like sometimes I'll do my jokes on the air, and I know if I was on stage, I'm going to say such and such. But if I'm on the radio, I'm already thinking two steps ahead and going, all right, I'm going to say this joke, but I'm going to take out that word, and I'm going to sub it with something else so that the joke still works, but it also works for radio.
How many people live inside you?
Oh, man, that depends on the grade of the weed or the amount of scotch. I don't know, man. It varies. You know, it sometimes if I'm having a good day and my mood is right and I hit the stage, I can do, you know, almost everybody. But then other times, you know, I might hold back a little bit. You know, I don't want to just be a one-trick pony. Mm-hmm. So even though people know me for impressions, and I definitely give them that at the show, I want to show people that I'm strong with material. Mm-hmm. As well, you know, because I think if you're a one-trick pony, it's almost like a novelty act. People go, oh, yeah, great impressionist, but then what?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to be able to show people, yeah, I can do that, but I also can do this. And I almost take more pride in doing that than the impressions. Because impressions for me is like, again, not to be vain or anything, it's like dunking. And you play ball, I can dunk anytime I want, but I want to show people other facets to my game. I can rebound, I can play defense, I can pass, I got great, you know, court IQ. So I care about that stuff.
When you say impressions, right away, that reminds me of an opportunity I had to go out to San Francisco.
Yeah.
The people that are listening on iHeartRadio, I swear, don't understand the difference between impressions and impersonations.
Right, right.
What does that mean to you? Do you think there's a difference?
I think there's a subtle difference. I think someone that's really good at it, it's not just the voice. It's their demeanor. It's the visual, the look. Like there are some guys that do impressions and they have the voice or the cadence, but they don't have the look. And when what makes a great, great impressionist is when you can capture everything. I mean, the look, the voice, you become that person. There's a comedian named Craig Gass. This dude does the meanest Al Pacino, Christopher Walken,
really?
And Sam Kinison. I swear to you, if you close your eyes, you'd think all three of them were in the room. I just did a sketch for my pilot. I'm doing a sketch comedy pilot. And HBO has this documentary called The Blacklist. They've done three of these. They got The Blacklist, The Latino List, and The Gay List. And basically what it is, it's well-to-do, affluent people within those communities talking about the hardships and the ups and downs of being black, gay, and Hispanic in America. And they've had everybody on there, which ranges from politicians to athletes to singers, artists. So I wanted to do one called The White List, which, of course, would be politically incorrect and you would never see because when have white people struggled in America? And I had Craig Gass do Walken and Pacino. And I'm proud of this, man. It's to hear Christopher Walken talk about being white in America.
Yeah.
It's priceless. It's absolutely priceless.
And what's so cool about him is he gets it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, Craig did Pacino, and at one point he says, I saw Django in a black neighborhood, black movie theater. I heard the N word 87 times. Then the movie started.
Oh, no.
it's awesome. He goes, my friend Bobby De Niro loves black women. His breath smells like menthol. It's awesome, dude. It's awesome. I had another comedian named James Adelman do George Bush Jr. And again, dead on impression. So he says at one point, he goes, you know, people say that I don't like black people. You know, that's not true. If I didn't like black people, I wouldn't have gone and saw The Butler. I saw The Butler, and it was hilarious. Yeah, so it's got some great sound bites, man.
So, what? I got to be honest with you. When I go to an African American film like The Butler, right. or I go to Ride Along and right. About Last Night, there's a lot of talking to that screen. Do people not realize it can't be heard?
Yeah, but you know, that's a black thing. Black people, we just, you know, when we get into something, we become one with it. You know what I mean?
It's like going to church, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's a good analogy. Yeah. I hadn't seen it in the theaters. I saw it in my hotel room. But I wish I had seen it in the theaters just to get people's reaction, particularly white people. Like, I just saw this movie, 12 Years a Slave.
Oh,
have you seen this?
It's going to get awards for the Oscars. Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, not yet.
Dude, I don't care what color you are, mm-hmm. you got to have a strong stomach for that one. Mm-hmm. I mean, that movie makes Roots look like a Disney film.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's rough. And But I said it's a new bit I'm doing. I said, you know, black people, we got to turn a negative into a positive. Because normally when we see movies like that, we get angry.
Exactly.
And rightly so. But I said, you got to make that work for you. If you're black and you live in an apartment and your landlord is white, have him come watch that movie with you. And then when that scene is finished, where they show a black man getting beat, and tied to a tree, butt naked, that's when you turn to your white landlord and go, look, I'm going to be a little late with the rent this month. It'll work for you, baby. You got to turn a negative into a positive. Yeah. So, yeah, man. But that was a rough one, brother. Mm. Yeah.
But you know what, though? I got to plead the Sylvester Stallone on that. When I was at the 25th anniversary of Rambo, and he believes that we have to stop glorifying war and we have to start telling the truth. The moment that we stop sharing the story of what really happened here in America, do you not think that we're headed into danger again?
No, not that kind of danger. Never that kind of danger. I just think it's important to remember, just kind of as a reminder to just know that, you know, it never would happen again, but it should never happen again. You know what I mean? That would never happen again. But, you know, history is important, man. You know what I mean?
It is, but you know, when I go down to Charleston and I walk through everything that's going that happened down there, and they've turned it into a little shop that's selling junk. That offends me.
When you say junk, what do you mean? Like what kind?
In other words, they'll have here. You can buy this trinket. You can buy that. And what I mean by junk is it has nothing to do with the history and everything to do with basically paying their electric bill. And I'm talking about little junk stores.
Right.
And so when you're walking through the market, you're going, you got to be kidding me.
So do you feel like they should have reserved a piece of history?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right.
That when I walk through there, I want to be able to feel the spirits.
Right.
I want something to come up and tap me in the shoulder.
Well, let me go back. And here's what, when you say, is it important to keep that alive? And here's why I do say that is because, you know, often I'll look at stuff on YouTube and, you know, people get into these race wars, man, about, you know, certain things racially. And it's just like some people will say, well, they didn't get the big deal why black people voted for Obama. Most white people got it. Mm-hmm. But there's some that were like, dude, just vote for the man for the right reasons. Or better yet, how come is it, you know, you hear white people say black people can call each other the N-word, but we can't say it. Why we can't say it? Well, watch 12 Years a Slave and there's your answer. The history behind that word. The bloodshed behind that word, that's why you can't. Mm-hmm. Black people voted for Obama because of the history of 12 Years a Slave and The Butler. And I don't know if you've seen The Butler.
Yes, I have.
But it's fascinating to see him go from the Eisenhower administration all the way up to
Reagan
mm-hmm. and then to be invited to the White House to meet the first black president. That's why we did it. Mm-hmm. The significance of that, the history of that. Is why it's important to never forget. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you know, so, like, there are some white people out there that feel like, look, racism is no longer relevant. It's not, it doesn't exist. You guys got a black president, see? And it's just like, one, don't even the game. Mm-hmm. You know, talk to me after we get our 17th black president.
Yep.
You know
yep.
what I'm saying? Or like Chris Rock said, when we have a black president that's as horrible as Bush, that's true equality. We can have that. Right now, Barack, he, going in, he had to be intelligent. He had to be articulate. He had to be all these great things, you know, great orator, you know, intelligent Harvard law professor. He had to have all those attributes. You know what I mean? Anything less wouldn't have been enough.
But you know what, though? And I speak with honesty. I watch people speak. The mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina, will be the next president.
You think so?
I guarantee it. That may, do you not think? Pat Cannon? Yeah. Oh my God, Pat Cannon has right. it. He's got that.
Is he 100% black or is
yes,
he?
Yes,
he's not like Barack half
no,
and half.
No. There's an essence about him that says you can lead.
Well, I'll tell you what. Again, that will be the true equality of America when we can have a full fledged 100% Negro. Who is as black as Bernie Mac in the White House? Now we have arrived. Barack is still half and half, so you know we're glad we got one in there. But he's half and half. I'm talking about full fledged midnight charcoal black. That's when we have arrived.
This is why you're a rock star. This is why when people heard that you were coming to Comedy Zone, they wouldn't leave me alone.
I'm telling
you because you relate with the people, and that maybe you're going to be that guy.
Oh man, I certainly hope so. You know I'm not. I certainly don't want to get too deep, but I'm at a crossroads right now. I'm really trying to figure out this life thing, because and it ain't just this industry. It's a period. Like I think when you're younger, you're naive mm-hmm. and you got this energy where you don't care and you think the world revolves around you. But as you get older and you see things and you put things in perspective and you see how unfair and how messed up life is, mm-hmm. and you start questioning your own mortality and how could this be right and how could that be right? Like, listen, I believe in God, but I'm questioning it because yeah. I just don't understand certain things. Like I was supposed to be here yesterday earlier, but on my way into the airport, driving into the airport, some major car accident on the freeway. And I mean, like almost like eight fire trucks.
LA,
eight fire trucks. A bunch of ambulances, cop cars. Her lady had to be airlifted from a van into, you know, to the hospital. Now, I don't know what her backstory is, but, you know, she was in a minivan, so I got to assume maybe she was a mom or something. And I'm going, now this lady got into a car accident that may put her near death, but there's rapists and child molesters breathing. How could God be real? Mm-hmm. You know, how can God exist? Mm-hmm. This is unfair, you know? And again, maybe in my younger days, I wouldn't have gave that two thoughts. But as I'm getting older, because, you know, I got this ego, you know, entertainers, we all got an ego. So I think I'm the man and I'm the greatest comedian alive and I can't be, you know, I can't be touched. And right. and then I'm sitting here at 38 going, yeah, I believe in myself. I'm confident. I think I'm pretty decent. But maybe I don't think I'm as hot as I used to. And who's to say that, you know, I can't be knocked off my pedestal. And then again, I'm not trying to get deep, but I'm at a crossroads. I can't figure this out, man. It's a lot of stuff don't make sense to me, and it bothers me.
Do you know what happens when you turn 40? Something starts clicking. By the time you turn 50, it really all of a sudden it's no longer about that.
Right.
You are going to love being 40. You're going to love being 50 and older.
I think I wouldn't have a problem. I think I'll love being 60 or 70 if I could reach that, as long as I got some money. You know what I mean? You know, Bill Maher, I'm a big fan of Real Time with Bill Maher.
Yeah.
And he had one of the greatest quotes. He was like, you know, look, I don't want to live to be 80, 90. Just give me 65 Sammy years. 65 Sammy Davis Jr. years. Give me 65 of those years with the women and the life and the glitz and the glam. And that's why I'm like, dude, as long as I got some paper and I ain't got to hold my hat in my hand and beg nobody for nothing, dude, if I'm 70, if I can live like I'm a king, I don't care. The age thing don't matter to me. Look, I've been to the Playboy Mansion.
Oh,
I've seen Hef.
Really?
There's a reason why he's 185 years old. He's happy. He's happy. You know, it's like that's an incredible thing to be that old and have a bevy of blonde buxom beauties on each arm. And, you know, a girl can taste his sack near his ankles. That's huge, man. You know what I mean? I'm going through a bit of divorce, so believe me, I know, man. He's happy. And when you're happy, you live a long life.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
All right, here's the question, final question for you. So my preacher guy goes, everybody looks up to these people who have made it, who are in front of people. They found success. But we don't understand your grind, grind of what it took there. What is your grind? What did it take to shape you?
I don't know that I'm there yet. I'm still grinding. I'm still shaping. You know, I got two baby mothers, man, and they don't work. I pay all the bills. You know, and they take that for granted.
And they're getting Obamacare.
Well, I'm Obamacare. And they take that for granted. And it's almost just like, you know, not to be harsh to the female listeners, but listen, if you're not an independent woman where you make your own way, you bust your ass and, you know, you're paying all your own bills. If you're abroad that has a man come in and basically take you from fish sticks to lobster, you need to remember that you used to eat fish sticks.
That's right.
And it's almost like Jack Nicholson. Again, I always refer to movies and sports, but in A Few Good Men, when he says that line about don't question the very freedom of the blanket that I provide and then question the method under which I provide it. I would rather you just say thank you and be on your way. And it's like when you're in a position like mine where you take care of people and they take that for granted, like, do you know that there are people that get up every day early in the morning and hate their life, hate their job? They go into their job with disgust, and they bust their ass just to keep the lights on and the heat on and put food in the refrigerator. You two bitches get that for free. Yeah. And you treat me like I'm the dude that works at Staples, you know, as a janitor. Like, I'm not saying, certainly I'm not rich by any means, and I'm not the biggest star in the world, but I ain't no schlep either. So, like, all I'm saying is respect me. Respect what I do. Respect my grind. Because every day these two ladies live in a house with heat, air conditioning, food, all the bills and needs are met, and they don't have to do a damn thing. Just, I'm not asking you to, you know, throw rose petals at my feet, but recognize me. Because you don't know how hard it is out here. This is a struggle. This is a grind. And, you know, every week is a new job. It's like I get hired and fired every week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Every week is a new job. And then when I'm done, that job is over till next year. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's almost like, you know, I'm living from paycheck to paycheck. Not really, but you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I'm smart enough to have saved some money and be smart. But, you know, it's a week to week thing. This ain't no, you know, steady one-time gig where I can be like, hey, I've been with this company for 20 years. You know what I mean? So there's some loyalty and a grace period. No, no, this is week to week,
yeah.
You know?
Plus, we now have a new T-shirt for you, Respect My Grind.
Yeah, I would represent it to the fullest, man.
You're at the Comedy Zone tonight, tomorrow, and so that would
and
be
Sunday.
And Sunday. And the show times tonight, 8 o'clock and 10:15. Saturday,
7 to 9:30,
and Sunday, 8 o'clock. Black people, everything you just heard, go back an hour. So when you show up late, you're on time.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. You read my mind.
Yeah.
You know, that's other people's time.
Yeah. You tell a black person 9:15, they'll be right on time at 10:15.
I was going to Siegel Presbyterian and Pastor Flo, right there in the center of Uptown, inner city Presbyterian Church, and she'd go, you know we're not going to be here on time. Oh, my God. That's why we started at 11:15.
Either that or tell them you're giving away stuff for free, and we'll be there. Black people and free go together like peanut butter and jelly, baby.
I love it. Thank you so much for
thank
coming
you, brother.
Into this
thank
studio,
you.
Man.
And you know what?
You.
To all the listeners, follow me on Twitter, @AriesSpears. Very simple. My name, @AriesSpears.